speaking today with Sherry Matula, who is a candidate for State House in District 129 in Harris County. Sherry, now you ran previously in 2006, so my first question for you is going to be, what made you decide to run again?
The problems had not gone away, and we were very encouraged by the results that we received in the 2006 election. And almost on the night of the results being called in, we decided that this was definitely worth pursuing this next time. So we launched in the campaign almost immediately after that.
What would you say you learned from the previous time as a candidate that you're, you know, that has affected the way you're running this time?
The main idea that I came away with that I had to improve on was, of course, the fundraising, and knew that I had to in some way engage with an agency or a firm that did fundraising. The other was to make sure that I had a campaign manager who was well-versed in the district and knew what they were doing. So those were the two areas that I decided need to be worked on.
Okay. Obviously, the big thing that's happened lately is Hurricane Ike. Your district is mostly Clear Lake, which, of course, was, you know, pretty strongly affected by the hurricane. You know, what have you been seeing since the hurricane passed through? What are you seeing in the district?
On the parts of the district that actually fronted onto Upper Galveston Bay, there has been a lot of damage, and the storm surge came up and through communities that you can see where they are going to either have to rebuild or have to gut houses and start all over again. In other areas, it was mostly wind damage, things where people could really get back to what their daily lives were fairly quickly.
Now, what would your assessment be of the preparation for and the response to the hurricane, especially in terms of, you know, state agencies?
Overall, I'm only approaching this from having been the president of a community association trying to get services into the particular community. We were very impressed with, from our standpoint, with the electrical services coming out. Most of the area around where we were within the week had fairly well restored. There were a few pockets, and we worked on those to make sure that they received help. There were some areas of the district over west of I-45 that were having difficulty with getting power, and we helped or tried to work with them. Other than that, probably just making sure that agencies were responsive and trying to follow up with where people might be having problems. The Blue Roof with the roofing seemed to have been very responsive. The city councilman from the area had already had one meeting and was, you know, trying to make sure that city services were being handled. Overall, I would say that it was working out pretty well. So.
Okay. Now, since you mentioned electricity, obviously, you know, we had some pretty long power outages, and as we speak today, there are people who are still without power.
Right.
There's been some talk about perhaps the legislature, you know, maybe requiring utilities like CenterPoint to take more steps to strengthen their infrastructure against storms. There have been a recommendation for this by the Public Utilities Commission that did not ultimately get adopted. Their response has been, well, that'll cost a lot of money, that'll get passed on to the consumers. What's your take on this?
I would have to do more research on it to see, you know, what was actually involved with strengthening the infrastructure. But what I have seen is that there is a will among the people in this district, as we've been out talking to them and talking to them on the phone, that we need to try and prevent as much as possible a long downtime as far as the electricity is concerned. Why wasn't it where there was more cutback of the trees and as you said, more building of an infrastructure so that you have a lot less time without electricity?
Now, what other actions would you like to see the legislature take in response to what has taken place with Hurricane Ike?
That's going to take some research and looking into, because it seems that the federal government, some of the areas of the federal government, what I've been hearing complaints about, have to do more with FEMA and non-response now that we're into the second stage. The POD came out and there was response, but I almost think it may take our legislature working with the congressional group to try and figure out what would be the best way to make sure that we have a very fast response time for what needs to be done.
There's been talk about the Texas Windstorm Insurance
Yes.
Association having, you know, financial difficulties as a result of this. There's also been talk about the state not having enough money in its disaster fund and maybe using money out of the rainy day fund instead. You know, what do you think about this?
I was very surprised about only having, what was it, over $100,000, I think, in the disaster fund, and wondered what was the thinking behind the state of Texas only having that much, knowing that we are exposed in many ways to disaster. And I would say that definitely needs to be addressed. I'm wondering if we can't keep going into the rainy day fund to continue to work on that, because that fund actually is for something else right now, as you and I both know, having to look at what's happening with some other funding in some areas. What is very different about this district is only a small portion of this district is actually covered under the Texas windstorm. It's only what's east of 146. So we have a lot of area of our district that is almost to that situation of needing some kind of pool to go to, because the Texas Fair Plan is not addressing it. And we found person after person who was having a very hard time even getting insurance in our area, who was having to go to a reinsurance. We had one couple who said they had to go to Lloyd's of London to get insurance for their home because of all the rules that had gone into place. So we've got a lot of major issues that need to be addressed having to do with the insurance.
And do you believe that, I mean, right now, windstorm insurance is separate from flood insurance.
Right.
And, you know, I believe we've talked to some people who've had issues where, you know, their insurer of one will say, no, it's the other guy who has to pay. Our coverage doesn't cover that. I believe State Senator Rondi Ellis is planning to propose legislation in the next session to require that, you know, one type of insurance would also cover the other type of thing. What's your take on that?
I would definitely say that need to be addressed, because we ran into some people in the district who had that very thing happen to them, where they had the one with the flood insurance were told, oh no, we're sorry, it was something else. It was the wind that did it instead of not the flood that did it. So we've got to look at how can we make sure that the insurance companies do not back out when these people need this coverage that they paid for year after year after year, and then whenever they need it, they don't get it.
Okay. Changing gears a little to the political aspect of all this, I mean, obviously a lot of people are not in their houses right now, either because, well, their houses may not be there, or they haven't been able to get back yet. Early voting is coming up. You know, how's your campaign dealing with displaced voters? How are you reaching them, or trying to?
We are probably going to actually be going out. We've started the process already, going out block by block and seeing if we can locate people and try to make sure that they have the ability to vote absentee if they need to, or find out how we can reach them. Because, as you know, the address is very critical in trying to reach them and make sure that it's the easiest form possible to be able to vote.
Okay. Moving on to some other issues. One of the main things that occurred in the last legislative session was the creation of a new business tax, the business margins tax, which is just now starting to be collected. A lot of people were not very happy with that. They said that it put too much of a burden on small businesses and left some of the bigger businesses off the hook. It also doesn't appear to be collecting enough money to cover the property tax cuts that it's trying to fund. What's your take on the business margins tax? What would you like to see the legislature do with it?
This area has a lot of small businesses, and not a single business that I talked to said that they did not want to do their fair share. They emphasized over and over again that they do want to pay the tax, pay their fair share. Either we are going to expand it and make it more encompassing, or we're going to have to go back and adjust what we were doing with these specific groups that were hit with the margins tax and look at how we can spread it across. It would be like saying, if you're a certain income, you have to pay the tax, but if you're not, you don't. Same way with the businesses. Everybody needs to come to the table to take part in paying their fair share of the taxes.
Now, of course, all this, you know, started out as an effort to reform school finance. Ultimately, what was done was just a change to the tax structure to deal with the Supreme Court ruling that said that the, you know, the current property tax limits were unconstitutional. Right. The school finance is still out there. Nothing has really been settled on it. You know, what needs to be done to put school finance on a more solid footing going forward?
Immediately, right now, in the next session, if there is not the will to move forward with really addressing the deep down fundamental problems with the school finance, we need to address the transportation stipend that has not been raised since 1984, because there are a lot of districts out there that are hurting as far as the transportation.
You're talking about things like school bus allowances,
yes,
and whatnot?
Absolutely, for school buses. The other is the unfunded mandates. And just as I addressed to you last time, we need to stop immediately with the unfunded mandates coming down from the state. If the state cannot fund it, they do not mandate it. They cannot mandate it. And the legislature needs to stop doing this. Just in the last session, there must have been over 20 unfunded mandates that school districts had to pay for. Just stop right now and not do any of the unfunded mandates.
Give me an example of one.
One of them would probably be the thing with the steroid testing. They ended up having to pay for the steroid testing as a front-end measure, the fingerprinting of the school district employees, the school districts that have done this so far. It's time after time after time there have been unfunded mandates, or the funding is so slow that the district is caught for that fiscal year without having the payment made to them of it. Of course, we go into the alternative Bible class, the energy plan that the districts had to work up. All of these were unfunded mandates.
Okay. Standardized testing is still a controversial issue. Where do we stand with that? Does the legislature need to revisit the concept? And, you know, if so, what should we be doing to ensure both that students meet some minimum requirements, but also ensure that the whole point of school isn't just to pass a test?
As a science consultant, last year in several of the schools that I worked in HISD, we counted up how many days were spent testing, and it came out to be 44 days, and in another region, 45 days. We need to look at how much are we actually going to be testing based upon what No Child Left Behind is required and what the state can do as a minimum, and then not test all these extra days within the school district, where we actually go back to letting the child learn the material before you actually test them. We have gone way beyond the testing that is required under No Child Left Behind's accountability structure.
Now, in 2003, the legislature, during time of budget shortfall, changed requirements for eligibility for CHIP. That wound up, throwing a whole lot of children off of the rolls.
Right.
Some of that has been rolled back, and the number of people enrolled on CHIP has slowly risen, though it's still not at the same level as it was in 2003. Your opponent, was one of the on the health and I believe the Health and Human Services
right.
Committee. He originally supported all this, and in 2006 he kind of reversed his position. Where do we stand with CHIP, and where do we need to go?
Right now, the extension from the 6-month to the 12-month reporting cycle did ease up and help families not get caught without the insurance. But there are still so many things that were cut basically we're talking about the language that needs to be looked at, because we're still disqualifying a lot of children that need the services of CHIP strictly through what the legislature has put in that is extra, and that goes back to 2003. So we've got a lot of children out there that need to qualify, that cannot qualify until we change some of those requirements based upon what we had restructured in 2003.
What would you consider to be your top priority as a legislator if you are elected this year?
The two issues that have come out solidly in this district that time after time after time that we have talked to people about have to do with the electric rates and the homeowners insurance. And those seem to be hitting more of our community across the board than anything else. I met a lady at the door who was in tears because her electric rate had gone from 12.5 cents to 21.5 cents in one period, and she could not pay her $900 bill for her electricity, and she didn't know what to do. She was afraid the service was going to be cut off. I met another couple, and this was time after time, who ended up not being able to even get insurance for their house, and they were wondering what were they going to do with that, because they were still trying to find, at the time that we talked to them, still trying to find a carrier that would take them for their insurance cost, and said they hadn't heard about Texas Fair Plan, and said, well, maybe that would be something that we might be able to do. We have so many people hit from that decision in 2003 to deregulate both of these. Of course, the college tuition is a whole other issue, but those are the two issues that I would say overall that the people in this district want their voice to be heard in the state house.
So what's your prescription?
Would be to carry the concerns from the community up to the state house and work with people that are up there to make sure that we really do give them a voice in this whole process.
Since you brought up the college tuition, as you were saying, in 2003, the legislature gave state universities the right to set their own tuition in return for not taking as much money up front from the state. College tuition has risen considerably at the state universities since then. A lot of people are not happy with that. Do you consider that plan, the deregulation of college tuition, to be, you know, something that needs to be rolled back?
Rolled back, looked at, decided what to do. It's such a diverse, there are a lot of answers to this that need to be blended together. What I know is that I have parents in my district where their students, their children, are either have a massive debt that they are having to pay off even before they get a job, or the parents have a debt and sometimes are doing things like accessing their retirement to try and make sure that their kids have, or their children have, the same right to college education that they do. And that's not going to, these people are not going to not get a college education. They will bankrupt themselves before they decide we just can't do it, because they want to have their kids have the same chance that they did.
When people go to the polls this November and they come to the state house race for House District 129, how do you want people to think about it when they go to vote?
I want them to really think about who they want representing them and being their voice and caring about what happens to them. Because right now, John Davis has the ear of the leadership, and they in turn are asking him to vote a certain way as far as the state house is concerned, where the people have been saying over and over again they either don't know who their state representative is, they don't have the information about it, or they feel like they have not been represented by John Davis. And I want to have that chance to go up and represent them and really give them a true voice in the state house of representatives.
Sharon Matula, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Charles.